you, Rose. I am actually not a doctor, but I appreciate that you thought I was. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm here to talk about the Connecticut Health Foundation's First Health Advocacy Grants Initiative. The Connecticut Health Foundation is what's known as a health legacy foundation. We were formed in 1999. Many health legacy or healthcare conversion foundations were founded in the late 90s and early 2000s all over the country, so there will be at least one, most likely, in the state that you're in. We came into our endowment when the health maintenance organization called ConnectiCare converted from being a nonprofit entity to a for-profit entity, and the equity in ConnectiCare became the corpus of our endowment. So we currently have assets. I think the latest update I got was actually that we're about at $155 million, and we grant out about $7 million annually. And one thing that's significant about the Connecticut Health Foundation is that in the last year, our board has directed us to invest in systems change. We had formerly funded direct service programs at a higher level, and they want us to now focus on some of the roots of the problems that touch upon our priority areas. And public policy is what we consider one of many different system changes. So that was one reason we decided to initiate a health advocacy program. I wanted to provide a little bit of context, and I think Dr. Gardner's presentation is actually very complimentary to my presentation, so, and we always come in with such limited knowledge of what the other speakers are talking about, but I think there are some areas of overlap. We have observed that many nonprofit organizations are hesitant to engage in advocacy, and the reasons are complex and multifaceted, but two of the key ones are misinformation and confusion about advocacy rules. They often equate advocating with lobbying, and first of all, they can lobby. There are limitations, but they are able to lobby. But advocacy is much, much broader than lobbying. And then they have a lack of advocacy capacity. And what I mean by a lack of advocacy capacity is that they don't have staff people dedicated to public policy. They don't have funding to advocate. They don't have training for their staff and their board and their constituents. So if we flip that around and move to the foundation side, while the California Endowment is progressive and looking at advocacy, I know Robert Wood Johnson Foundation had a new advocacy initiative around universal health care in 2007. The fact is that the majority of foundations in the United States are also extremely hesitant to fund advocacy. They also have misinformation and confusion about advocacy rules, and the rules for foundations are slightly different than the rules for nonprofit organizations. Boards are often a little bit uncomfortable with advocacy, and it's seen as a risky investment. And there is a greater degree of scrutiny on foundation work. There have been some high-profile articles in major newspapers and that have come out of think tanks, and philanthropy used to operate fairly under the radar, but there is greater attention to how philanthropic funds are being spent, and I think that is a good thing, but it makes people nervous, especially when there are IRS rules and regulations around some of the things that relate to advocacy. And finally, there are evaluation challenges, but I think Dr. Gardner highlighted that there are good ways to evaluate advocacy efforts. There are metrics related to funding, documenting partnerships, and ways that you can evaluate advocacy. But as you all know, when a successful public policy that affects health is passed, it's usually the coming together of multiple efforts. So the art is always trying to attribute the efforts of a particular organization to the advocacy success. So our initiative was to encourage nonprofit organizations to ensure that health was part of the public debate during the 2006 election season. And we wanted to do this because we wanted to tell the nonprofit organizations in Connecticut that they could add credible visibility to the health issues of vulnerable populations, and that nonprofit organizations are often considered more credible than lobbyists because they can take their direct service knowledge back to the policymakers to inform them about what the true needs are in the community. We limited eligibility to our existing grantees, so we have about 160 open grants at any given time. And we wanted to ensure that the health policy issues that the grantees worked on were at least somewhat related to the priorities of the foundation. And this was on an extremely aggressive timeline. So the funding was from April of 2006 through December of 2006. So that's 9 months. But given that the elections occur in November, most of the work was going to have to be done in a six-month period. And we were making available 9 awards of $25,000. So a small amount of money, but really to accomplish projects in a six-month time period. We did not allow grantees to hire staff with the funds, but we did let them hire consultants to help them to complete their projects. But we didn't feel that bringing new staff on for this short time period and small amount of money was at all sustainable. We had in our request for applications, we outlined a number of different advocacy activities that nonprofit organizations can freely engage in without concern, so long as they're nonpartisan. And I've highlighted in blue what the grantees actually tended to focus upon. And that was surprising and yet not surprising to us at the same time. I think, you know, advocacy, especially for organizations that aren't used to advocating, is a growing process. So this seemed to be kind of the starting point for the grantees. However, if we are to do this in the future, I think we would try to gently nudge some of the grantees to try, you know, public opinion polling or to do some nonpartisan policy research and to get beyond just using media or trying to target the candidates. We do not just write checks. We provide intensive technical assistance to our grantees. So we brought out the SPEN project. They're based in Northern California, and they have expertise in strategic communications training. And so a condition of accepting the grant funds was to attend a day-long Saturday workshop where they got training on messaging and framing their strategy and mapping out some of the different targets of their communications. They got a couple books from SPEN Project, and then we also contracted with SPEN to provide a one-to-one follow-up TA after their day-long workshop where they could talk to the consultant with specific questions and concerns about their particular project. And so one interesting thing we did with this initiative is, you know, I'm sure many of you have applied for grants before, and with a lot of grant applications, you outline what you're going to do and what the results are going to be. And funding decisions are made on how well you do that. With this initiative, we were trying to find applicants who had the capacity and readiness to engage in a very aggressive advocacy project. So we wanted them to tell us that they had some advocacy success story in their recent past that they could build upon. So we told them that their actual work plans for their projects would not be due until after they received the technical assistance. I just wanted to highlight 3 grantees. We ended up funding 9 of them, but I wanted to show the different levels of success. And to us, all of these are victories. And, you know, certainly in a short time period, we tried to have realistic expectations. So I will name this organization because they actually presented at the conference on their full project yesterday. This was the Yale Griffin Prevention Research Center. And we had funded them at several hundred thousand dollars previously to do a community-based participatory research project with African American churches in New Haven and Bridgeport, Connecticut, around diabetes education. And they wanted to tie the work they had done on diabetes and universal health care with their advocacy project. So they targeted constituents and candidates, and they created these voter education pieces. And I know it's hard to read, but basically they work with people who are prominent faces in the community, and they tell their healthcare story, and they urge people to vote for candidates that support universal healthcare. And one thing that was striking about their effort is, you know, they would go out to places like Jazz Fest and to churches, and people would tell them, "I just don't vote. I don't vote." And after they made six or eight of these flyers telling different stories of African-American leaders in the community, and they were so compelling that people actually came back and said, "I get it now, I'm going to vote." And to see that in a very disenfranchised community was quite striking to us. And then they started legislative roundtables. So representatives in the New Haven area and people who work with people who work for nonprofit organizations meet together on a regular basis to discuss needs of the community. The other group is a very small Asian mental health services organization, and they wanted to raise the visibility of Asian health disparities and to break out of the model minority stereotype and to engage Asian American voters. Oftentimes, even though the Asian American community is well educated and has higher levels of income as a whole, they are considered non-voters and they don't have much of a voice. So they were successful in developing a coalition that's still active to this day, and they got $25,000 in the new in the 2009 state budget for Asian Affairs Commission. All other racial and ethnic groups in Connecticut have a commission except for the Asian community. So they actually didn't get the legislation to support the commission, but they got a small amount of funding. So they're hoping that in the next session they can kind of back their way into getting the commission through this victory. And then I'm going to breeze through this one. This is a small nonprofit organization that works in childhood lead poisoning, and they took a very communications-focused approach, and they actually set the stage for the passage of lead poisoning prevention legislation that was funded in the past legislative session. So we had multiple indicators of success at all levels. This was such a small initiative that we didn't use an external evaluator. We usually do for our multi-year initiatives. But all of the ones with the checks, we feel fairly confident that we achieved. The others are a little harder to make a call on. For example, we provided the grantees with technical assistance around strategic communications, but advocacy skills are much broader than that. We wanted to improve the policy environment for health issues. 2006 was actually a great year. There was a lot of attention on the election, and health issues were fairly prominent, but we cannot really say to what extent we played a role in that. And then to quickly go over some of the challenges, the grantees had less existing advocacy capacity than we assumed. We assumed that they'd be at a very basic level, but as I mentioned earlier, we were also trying to fund organizations that had some victory and capacity to build on. And once we started getting the work plans, we saw that that we were going to need to provide more technical assistance. The nonprofit organizations are often responsive, and to shift their focus to being strategic was quite challenging for them. We found they needed general strategy technical assistance, so we started with strategic communications, but they just needed to think about their overall advocacy strategy first. And then they tended to target candidates and policymakers over their constituents. This is probably because we, in some ways, led them to that path by making this an initiative during the election season. So in the future, we need to put more emphasis on the importance of a constituency. And the recommendations are fairly basic. Nonprofit organizations need to play a more prominent role in shaping responsive public policies, but we also recognize that they can't do that unless funders step up and start funding health advocacy activities and building advocacy capacity in nonprofit organizations. So there are a couple great resources for foundations and nonprofits where they can learn all of the rules and educate themselves, and I'm happy to share these with you. You can email me for the references. So thank you very much.